Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. So tap into the pulse of today's young folks when we talk about their pets. Joining me, and I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, is Dr. Blair Anderson, and I'm so very glad to have you. We are going to talk about Buck Lake Animal Hospital on Mahan Drive, and then we will talk about summer pet care. Dr. Anderson, welcome to 411 Yes. Team. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, will you give us an overview of the practice at Buck Lake Animal Hospital, or blah? I love that.
Yes, I'd be happy to. So Buck Lake Animal Hospital is a three-doctor, predominantly small animal hospital. We are located on Mahan Drive across from the Falls Chase shopping center. Mm-hmm. And yes, three doctors, busy practice. Yes.
Okay. All right. Veterinarians extraordinaire.
Yes.
Okay. You know, and I ask because, you know, I know that veterinarians can specialize, as I was preparing for the program, my goodness, in everything from dentistry, you know, to, I know we can go into some go only dogs, some cats, some exotic animals, farm animals. So you all are mainly, what, dogs and cats?
Yes, okay. Mainly dog and cats. We see about 65% of our practice is canine, so dogs. 30%, we see about 30% feline, and then Dr. Varela will see some exotics, which will include pocket pets like hamsters, gerbils, guinea pigs, some reptiles, some lizards, turtles, tortoises. Yes, he does. Ooh. And Dr. Van Tassel will see those, a few as well. She's learning through Dr. Varela. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then I guess all the others go someplace else, right?
Yes. We do not see avian.
Okay.
We do not see birds. That's a special, special subset of veterinary medicine. And we do not see monkeys.
Okay. All right. That covers it. Do you provide boarding and kennel?
Yes, we do. We have a pretty large boarding facility. We stay pretty busy, especially during the summer months. And then we do baths and day boarding, kind of like spa day for the dogs. They can come and get their nails done in their bath, and then their owners can pick them up after work.
Oh, my God. Okay. That's great. That's great.
Yes.
How did COVID impact your practice? Because I think of COVID, and I know that was a time when there were a rush on pets, and people were at home all the time, and they wanted a pet, and so you saw a lot of pets being adopted.
Yes. We, the very beginning of COVID, we slowed down just a little bit, but then we picked up. We had some of our best months during the end part of the quarantine, the heavy quarantining. But so yes, we had a lot of new clients, a lot of new pets during that time. We did transition to curbside only for a large portion of it. And then, you know, but people, it didn't deter people from coming. And then we, once we reopened our doors to the public, we required everyone to wear a mask and the staff wore a mask. And just probably the past 2 months, we dropped the masks. So, yeah, I mean, overall, our clinic you know, thrived during it. So I couldn't complain of, you know, it was definitely a different time, but we grew.
Mm-hmm. Well,
which is crazy. Yes.
That's what you want. That's what you
yes,
want.
Okay. Absolutely.
When you think of treating animals, what is the most challenging? I always think of veterinarians that like pediatricians because similar, because usually your pet can't tell you what's going on, and often the baby or the toddler can't tell you what's going on, so you have to, you know, figure it out yourself. And I know you have a number of different, you know, variables that you look at, but so what is it like dealing with dogs and cats who can't really tell you?
Yeah. I mean, like you mentioned, it's really hard sometimes because, you know, they can't tell you where it hurts or, you know, why they're acting the way they're acting, if they're upset about something, you know, so we really have to base it on what the owners are telling us. 'Cause you know, they're there, their spokesperson, you know, they know them best. Those are the animals are their babies, you know? So what they're telling us, and then our diagnostics, you know, so that's why it's really important, you know, that we are able to run tests, you know, blood work and x-rays and, lameness exams and thorough physical exams to try to find out what's going on when they do come in sick. And then sometimes, you know, the hardest part is when they come in and they're just not doing well, and we run all of those tests and, you know, they may all be normal. And then I don't have an answer. So that's usually the hardest. So I rely a lot on what, you know, the owners tell me and what my, you know, my diagnostics show me.
Mm-hmm. What define for me and explain to me what it is encompassed with a homeopathic veterinarian?
So homeopathic veterinarians, they tend to, you know, they use a lot of different methods. You know, they don't like to use a lot of medicine. Sometimes there's a whole book one of my clients brought me on, essential oils, you know, sometimes acupuncture. There's a veterinarian in town that does acupuncture, which is huge. You know, mainly they don't rely on your routine medications like traditional veterinarians would use.
Okay. All right. When you talk about oils, I know in preparation for the program, one thing that I encountered a number of places is using CBD oil in animals.
Yes.
So that's the end thing now? Talk to me about it. Is that effective? You know, what kind of risk are associated with that?
I think the main thing with it is, you know, it's not regulated. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not, you know, AVMA, American Veterinary Medical Association, it's not, you know, approved yet. Mm-hmm. So there are so many outside sources that people can use for it. So you have to be careful. There's a new company that we just recently went to a big conference in Las Vegas. And the company that is the only one that's, I think, certified right now is called Ellevet, E-L-L-E Vet.
Okay.
And they have products. We use it. We've been using it for anything from arthritis pain. I have a couple of patients that have really severe epilepsy, and it can help with that. And then some people will use it for its calming effects for, you know, thunderstorm anxiety or separation anxiety. So those are the main three reasons why people are, you know, turning to that. you know, if the routine medications they're using aren't working as well, or sometimes they combine the effects, you know.
And they also have chiropractic adjustments too?
That
I don't
one
know.
Is
I
not...
saw that. I just yes. read about that one, and I was a little, you know, I wasn't
yes.
aware of it.
I either. Haven't heard too much about that.
Mm-hmm.
Acupuncture is huge. Yeah. There's a whole school you can go through to be certified through it for acupuncture. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. So that's like a whole other subspecialty. And I know one of the veterinarians in town does that.
Oh, okay. And mm-hmm. what about euthanasia? How do you address or handle euthanasia in your practice?
So we try to, you know, euthanasia, it's, you know, it's, we try to make it as pleasant, obviously, as possible, you know. It's one of those things, I think, for our pets, again, they can't tell us, you know, I really hurt, or I'm not mm-hmm. getting better, or I just, you know. So euthanasia, especially when they're older or have, you know, incurable diseases that we can't fix. Dogs and cats are so stoic by nature mm-hmm. that sometimes they will just keep going and going and going, and it just becomes a point where it's just not fair for them, you know? So we do have that as an option, which is sometimes a really valuable option just to stop the suffering and, you know, so it's something that, you know, a lot of people say, gosh, I can't believe how can you do that? It's so hard. And it is very hard, but it's also.
It's very humane. I think we ought to do it for adults.
Yes, yes, I agree. And sometimes it's rewarding because you can finally, you know, stop the pain for them. And it's very, you know, the way we do it, we do give, you know, sedatives mm-hmm. and pain meds and all those things. So most of the time it's very, very, very peaceful for the pet and for the owner.
Okay. So the owners can be there if they want to. Or...
Absolutely. Absolutely. The owners have an option of being with the pet throughout, or they have an option of not being with the pet, and there's no right or wrong way. And if they're not with them, you know, the whole staff is usually with them,
mm-hmm.
You know, taking care of them. And then they also have the options of taking their pet home for burial. Or
okay. Can you hold
cremation?
Your thoughts? Hold your thoughts for a moment. We're
yes.
going to take a brief break. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and families and other interested folks. This hour, we're featuring Buck Lake Animal Hospital, and we're also examining the summer and hot weather safety. Dr. Blair Anderson, Buck Lake Animal Hospital, joins us. I had to interrupt you, Dr. Anderson, and
yes.
you were just finishing on euthanasia. Were there some other thoughts you wanted to share?
It's, I like to think of it as, you know, most people think of it as such a negative thing, but, you know, in my mind, it's a valuable aspect for us, you know, to have a resource for us
to
end their suffering. Yeah.
Well, I think I tend to, that's one of the reasons I asked is because I did have a friend who, to me, and this is my opinion, just allowed their dog to go too far. You know, the
yes.
dog was clearly in pain. Couldn't mm-hmm. hear, blind, you know, blind in one eye, can't see out the other, you know, and it was very obvious that it was in pain. It was just misery. So
mm-hmm.
That's why I asked how you handle it. But let's get on to this summer and hot weather safety.
Yes.
First of all, I guess, what are the signs, and you can do it either way, Philippa, what are the signs of a healthy dog or a healthy cat? Because I think we need to know what is healthy before we go into what is not healthy. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So a healthy dog, you know, we like to look at things like body condition score, Usually we grade a dog based on its body condition.
Mm-hmm.
A one being extremely thin, emaciated skin and bones, a 10 being obese, overweight, not able to walk, you know, having mm-hmm. trouble, heavy panting. So we like for dogs and cats to be at about a 5.
Okay.
Yes. Good, nice skin coat, hair, you know, nice, healthy hair,
mm-hmm.
Teeth, you know, minimal tartar. You know, they can hear, they can run, they can play, they're happy. That's what we like to see.
Okay. And I guess on the flip side, when you see that they are unhealthy, you know, they may be lethargic, they may not be eating, but you elaborate on that too. Mm-hmm. And that gives us, the owners, you know, an idea that something might be going on.
Yes. Yes. So, yes, a lot of times, you know, and the basic things we see when they're not healthy, when I think of an animal that may not be healthy, you know, just like people, you know, we think about obesity. Obesity mm-hmm. can lead to disease processes, diabetes, you know, dental disease is huge in animals. People don't realize, you know, we're not brushing their teeth every day like we do. So basically it's a buildup of lots and lots of bacteria. I mean, you see your dogs and cats licking, grooming, out in the yard, eating all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. All that bacteria can get in the bloodstream, affect the heart, affect the lungs. You know, lameness and arthritis is another one we see. Again, obesity can lead to that. Also, there's some genetic conditions mm-hmm. that can lead to lameness. But yeah, so those are some things I think about when I think about unhealthy
uh-huh.
in okay. animals.
Well, I want to double back to dental health because yes. I'm a longtime pet owner, and it just seems like as of lately, and I don't know, last 20 years maybe, mm-hmm. to for me, that dental health has come to the forefront. Is that correct?
Yes.
I never knew about getting a toothbrush to brush my dog's teeth.
Yes. Well, and it also depends on the dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're used to having large breed dogs, big dogs, mm-hmm. you know, I know you have your Rhodesian Ridgebacks, Labs and Great Danes, you know, they mm-hmm. have larger teeth and larger surface area. And also those larger breed dogs tend to chew more.
Mm-hmm.
We see more dental disease in the small breed dogs. And I think it's because they aren't big chewers, number one. And number two, I think people feed the smaller breed dogs maybe more soft food.
Okay.
And that can lead to more, you know, dental disease. So it does depend on the pet. And then cats have a whole nother subset of dental issues. They can have what we call resorptive lesions, where they're immune system actually attacks their teeth. And some cats can get it so severe that it's recommended to pull all of their teeth to remove the source of pain. Yes. We see that a lot. But yeah, it depends on the pet. And that's why mm-hmm. it's so okay. important to bring your pets in for annual exams so we can catch these things early.
Well, I want to double back to something you said. And talking about the dental care, and you mentioned the food, soft mm-hmm. food versus, you know, dry, I guess, hard food.
Yes.
Talk about that. Elaborate on that. The benefits,
yes.
Of it.
So the hard food, the dogs and cats have to chew it up. So it's crunchy, and mm-hmm. it actually breaks down some of that tartar and bacteria on their teeth, just that friction of chewing. And then the soft food, it's softer, obviously. So you're not crunching it. So there's not as much friction. So I think it accumulates more bacteria in general.
Okay.
Plus it's richer. So if you think about mm-hmm. eating rich food versus food, less sugar, less fat,
mm-hmm.
you know, it plays more of a part in and dental disease.
Now, is that the same? Does that apply to cats too?
Yes.
Okay, so either one. All right. Now, we are in the midst of increasingly high temperatures.
Yes.
And we have to devote some time to looking at the summer health and summer safety.
Yes.
How hot is too hot?
So rule of thumb, if it's too hot for you, it's too hot for your pet.
Okay. Now that
you have to think, it's almost like they're wearing a fur coat too.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. And I wanted to make sure of that was the case. Because often you see in the middle of the day when it is the hottest, people will be out jogging and running with their dogs. And sometimes I think, oh my God. And I just wonder, is it just me or is that too hot? You know?
I think it's too hot. And there's been multiple occasions where I've wanted to pull over and tell them to stop.
Oh, really?
Sometimes, yes. It's tough because people don't think about it. But, you know, if it's too hot and the water, you know, another thing is water. If your dog's outside and the water's too hot for you to drink, it's too hot for them.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Shade is important. Extremely important. As far as exercising outside, it's important to do it really early in the morning when it's cool, or really late in the evening after the sun goes down.
It would have to be really late now these days, because it could be 8 o'clock and it's 78, 80 degrees.
Yes. Yes. And if a lot like people, if let's say your dog is very active and is used to walking a lot, you know, that may help the dog to act, you know, to acclimatize to the climate. But if it, like I said, if it's too hot for you, it's way too hot for them.
Okay. Okay. So are there any activities that one can do with their dogs on a hot day, or should it just be something inside, or should they just lay back and chill?
Swimming, you know, swimming.
Well, is that good? It's because I was concerned about that, because I thought a lot of dogs don't know how to swim real well. We think they do, but in reality, some dogs don't swim as well as others.
I think it's one of those things, if they're swimmers, they're going to be swimmers. It's some dogs just swim, you know, and they're just born to swim. Bully breeds are not good swimmers in general, unless they're trained to swim. And also that being said, bully breeds are more prone to heat stroke as well, just because they have the shorter
flat
nose and their breathing, their genetic breathing issues that they're, you know, genetic. So, but you know, a lot of dogs will swim. And if they're used to swimming and like swimming, then I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but we also have to have water sources for them. You know, cool water so that when they are swimming, it's exercising, you know, so they have, they need to take breaks and drink the water. And also water, you got to limit it too, because if they're really hot, they're going to inhale the whole bowl of water and then they're going to vomit.
Well, right.
So small little bits of water at a time. But yeah, swimming or just staying inside, you know, because if it's too hot for them, it's, or if it's too hot for you, it's too hot for them.
Do they need life vest? I read that. So that's why, that's where this is coming from.
I think in open bodies of water, like if you take your dog on the boat and the dog's used to being on a boat out in the, you know, in the bay or, you know, the river, the lakes, then yes, I would put them in a life vest just so you can easily access them, you know, have access to them. But if they're in a pool and they're good swimmers and they're used to swimmers, they should be okay. I think the little dogs, I would probably err on putting them in life vests. I don't know. That's just me.
Okay.
And well, they're cute.
Yeah, they are. What are the signs of heat exhaustion in dogs or cats that owners need to be aware of? And yes. I think you touched on one because you said they drink up a whole lot of water.
Drink excessive amounts mm-hmm. of water. Vomiting mm-hmm. is one. Vomiting. Okay. Excessive panting. Restlessness. Not able to settle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can, you know, you can take their temperature with a normal thermometer. In the veterinary practice, we take their temperature rectally, but you can also take their temperature in their armpit.
Okay.
But if you're worried about heat stroke, then it's imperative that you get them immediately to the vet.
Mm-hmm.
Rule of thumb, you know, the other thing that people don't think about in Florida, not only is it hot, but the humidity.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
is
true.
Brutal for dogs because the panting and the, you know, they don't sweat. So the humidity is something that can be really detrimental to them. So sometimes people, you know, I've had some really sad cases of people hiking, you know, Tom Brown Park, and sometimes they're doing it, you know, by the books. They're doing it before 8 a.m. or mm-hmm. 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. and they still get heat stroke because it's just too humid.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you recommend, and I've seen people do this, shaving their dog during this hot weather period? I've had friends that will just shave their dog down to like a buzz cut.
Yes. I think it's great for long-haired dogs.
Okay.
In Florida, in the summer, I think it's great. It you know, it takes away some of that heavy coat so that mm-hmm. they can air out and breathe better, you know, okay. and not carrying around that heavy load of fur. I'm all for it.
Okay. All right. Now, once you do that, do they require sunscreen? And if so, I mean, what should the SPF be? I mean, mm-hmm. because that's another concern I had.
A whole nother thing. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, after you shave a dog, fair skinned dogs, you know, just like us, if they're mm-hmm. pink on their bellies, or on their faces, or on their ears, you know, their extremities. Sunscreen, you know, yes, sunscreen is important. Dogs can actually get sun cancer. It shows up as little teeny tiny red or black, looks like little skin tags.
Okay.
And sometimes those can get bigger and worse, just like people. They can show up, but any changes in shape, size, consistency of them, they should be removed. Sunscreen, I think, you know, basic SPF 30 to 40 okay. is fine. I tell people to use children's sunscreen just because it's milder and mm-hmm. dogs are going to lick everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even just use the spray variety and spray them down, you know, every couple days. It depends on how often you bathe them as well.
Well, that's a question too.
Yeah. If they like to sunbathe, then yes, they do need sunscreen because mm-hmm. just like their skin is similar to our skin where it will burn, it will, you know, they can get sun cancer. Mm-hmm. So yes.
On the flip side, there's so many questions I want to ask you, but yeah. What about the paws? Because I know the paws are soft. Do we need to protect them? I mean, in Michigan, where I came from, we protected their feet because it would get so cold. And so they yeah. would put we would really put little booties on their paws if they were going to be out for an extended period of time. Well, the flip side of that would be it being so hot, you know, that
yes.
the pavement might.
Yes.
So how do we handle that?
So rule of thumb, if it's too hot for you to walk okay. barefoot,
okay.
it's too hot for their paws.
All right. Now, will putting little pads on their feet help? Or
I just recommend avoiding mm-hmm. concrete blacktop. If it's too hot for us, it's too hot for them. Most dogs, won't tolerate the booties. Again, mm-hmm. if the pet is experienced and used to those conditions, like, you know, walking, mm-hmm. you know, on the concrete or the asphalt, then booties, yes. But if that concrete or asphalt is too hot for our feet, they shouldn't be walking out there anyways.
Okay. All right.
Those paw pads can slough, they can burn, mm-hmm. and it's extremely painful. It would be like if you got blisters on your fingers.
Mm. Okay. Well, I think I know the answer to this, but what's your position on leaving your dog in the car? I'm just going to run into the store for a minute. Of course, sometimes you get in the store and you're in there a half an hour, but leaving your dogs in the car.
I don't recommend it at all. Okay. If it's an emergency and you absolutely have to, leave the car on with the AC on. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times cars now, you can do that. And that's something, you know, if that's the case. So I have a Tesla now, and I can actually put my car in dog mode.
Oh, really?
Yes. And it keeps the air temperature on. It keeps it cool in the car. So that's the only condition that I would do it. But, you know, a lot of cars, you don't have that access, you know. So it's best just to leave your pet at home. But mm-hmm. In an emergency, leave the car on, leave the car running with the AC on.
Okay. Well, hold your thoughts. I have been talking with Dr. Blair Anderson from Buck Lake Animal Hospital, and we are covering all things hot, how you handle your pets in this hot weather. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we will look at allergies and bathing your dog and how often you need to bathe them. That's it. Hold on.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and returning with me is Dr. Blair Anderson, veterinarian extraordinaire. Dr. Anderson is with Buck Lake Animal Hospital. Dr. Anderson.
Yes.
How often should we bathe our dogs, and what solution or what should we bathe them with?
So I think that is dependent on the dog.
Okay.
So some dogs, you know, just stay cleaner than others in general. Mm-hmm. you know, but I don't think there's anything wrong with bathing your dog every week. Every other week. And then in some cases, when they have severe allergies, yeast infections on the skin, staph infections of the skin, I tell clients they can bathe them up to every day with a medicated shampoo, if that's the case. So those cases, I like to use medicated shampoos that have mild antibiotic and mild antifungal in them. Mm-hmm. Ketoconazole and chlorhexidine is a common one that you can get from the vet, or sometimes they have some over the counter. Mm-hmm. But most of the ones with the antibiotic and antifungal, you have to get from your veterinarian. They're prescription shampoos. Aloe and oatmeal is a wonderful, just basic over-the-counter shampoo you can use. And then sometimes I tell people just basic baby shampoo, just because it's gentle and soothing on the skin. That's something you can use. You can dilute it with a little bit of water and, you know, lather them up. If they do have heavy allergies, like I said, I'll have people, the longer that antibiotic and antifungal contacts the skin, the more effective it is. So I sometimes let them sit with the shampoo for 30 to 45 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And I even tell my clients, you know, let them run around outside with it on, because, you know, they're already, you know, you're going to rinse it off. Or if it's a small dog and they'll sit still, you can wrap them in a towel and sit with them inside, watch a show, and then rinse it off. And then, you know, cats, you know, most cats do not tolerate water. So I tell clients probably to avoid bathing their cats, mm-hmm. unless it's a specific condition that we were trying to treat and it absolutely 100% needs a bath. So,
okay. Well, when folks knew that I was going to have you, one thing I must have gotten this from this everyone who knew that I was going to have you here, have her talk about allergies, all kinds yes. of allergies. You could spend the whole time talking about allergies. So yes. we're going to devote the most of the rest of this time, if we can, to yes. allergies. I mean, I guess pets are like children, like we say. They have yes. allergies. They get ear infections. They react yes. to insect bites. So let's go. Let's look at allergies. What are okay. the most common allergies that you see in dogs and pets and cats?
Okay. So allergies, the most common allergy we see in dogs and cats here mm-hmm, in yeah. Tallahassee, Florida, is flea allergies.
Okay.
A lot of times if a pet comes in and they are itching and check skin, the first thing I do is I look to see when the last time they purchased or, you know, got any sort of flea prevention.
Okay.
And if that's not in their record, then that's the first thing I'm going to talk about and the first thing I'm going to look for.
Okay.
Because that's the most common.
All right. So yes. I gather fleas are a problem.
Fleas are a problem. And in Florida, it never gets cold. Well, in Tallahassee, it never gets cold enough for them to die off. So it is year round.
Are there any preparations that you suggest or know are particularly effective?
So I'm a huge fan of NexGard, which is monthly mm-hmm. Flea prevention. Brevecto, which is every 12 weeks. Mm. And then, so there are some topicals, but in my opinion, the topicals don't work as well in the dogs. Now, Revolution Plus is the flea prevention of choice for cats. That one okay. is topical.
Okay. All right. Anything else on allergies? Do they have food allergies?
Yes. Yes. So the fleas is the most common. Now there's okay. there's three different types of allergies in dogs and cats. So seasonal allergies, we see, you know, basically think of that as, you know, certain plants or certain trees. You know, we have the live oak. Mm-hmm. Anything that's pollinating during that time can cause allergies. So we see this, you know, in dogs when the seasons change, mm-hmm. In the spring, in the fall, most commonly, they start to get itchy. They start to scratch. So let me back up. Allergies in dogs and cats are absorbed across their skin.
Okay.
So they're not like humans where we get respiratory sinus mm-hmm. infections, sneezing, you know. In dogs and cats, we usually see rashes,
okay.
chewing on their feet, mm-hmm. ear infections, sometimes anal gland infections, which is a huge one that people don't correlate with allergies.
Okay.
Scooting on the mm-hmm. floor and we can check their anal glands and they're full, you know, in dogs mostly. Okay. Cats usually don't have an issue with it, but seasonal allergies, food allergies, those are less common in my opinion and what I see, but those tend to be everything I mentioned before, chewing their feet, ear infections, but a lot of times they'll have a GI component. So sometimes mm-hmm. they'll vomit every now and then, mm-hmm. They'll have gas, a lot of gas. They can clear a room, you know, sometimes they'll have softer stool or, you know, occasionally they'll have diarrhea every now and then. And what I'll ask people is, did we change the treats? Did we change the food? Did we give table food that they're not used to getting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's atopy, which is just genetic allergies, just predisposition allergies. Those are the pets we see year round.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. You know, we can change the food. We can, you know, it's any time of year. You know, we've tried all the different food, and those dogs and cats, it's just lifelong.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's the other thing that people don't think about with their pets. Allergies in dogs and cats, it's never going to be a one-time quick fix. Mm. It's just because they have allergies, so we're never going to cure them of it. It's maintaining them, just like mm-hmm. people. So mm-hmm. for me, I have to take my Zyrtec.
Mm-hmm.
I have to take my Zyrtec and my Flonase. And if I don't, I get sick, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing with them. If we don't keep them on their regimen, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, certain food, rabbit and pea food, or duck and potato food, or venison mm-hmm. food, you know, or if they're not on their Atopica for cats, which is a medication we use commonly, or if they don't have their Apoquel and they haven't had their Apoquel, you know, their allergies are going to flare up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I think that should cover it. Toxic. Let's look at things or foods that we all hear about a lot, the grapes, the chocolates, but would you, again, share them with the listening audience, the substances that are toxic to our dogs and cats?
So the most common toxicities we see, like you mentioned, chocolate is huge. Mm-hmm. Usually the darker, more pure the chocolate, the more toxic.
Mm.
So the dark chocolate or the 100% cacao chocolate is going to be more toxic to them than milk chocolate.
Okay.
Or white chocolate is going to be the least toxic. And it also depends on the amount and the size of the pet. So if one large dog, 80-pound dog, eats one chocolate chip, I'm not going to be as worried as if a Chihuahua eats, you know, a whole dark chocolate bar.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in general, chocolate is probably the most common we see. Okay. Grapes are huge, and it's the skin of the grapes that can cause kidney failure in dogs and cats. Less common in cats. We don't see it as much in cats as dogs, because dogs will eat anything, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Onions are toxic to dogs and cats. Garlic is toxic. Certain plants, a huge one we see here is sago palms, are extremely toxic to dogs and cats.
Okay.
Lilies, mm-hmm. lily plants, cats love to chew on plants.
Mm-hmm.
So we see lilies are very toxic. Oleander is another mm-hmm. flower that's toxic. Trying to think. Cherries, the cherry pits are toxic.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
What about substances with artificial sweeteners in them?
Yes, xylitol.
Mm-hmm, that's it.
Xylitol,
yeah.
Chewing gum, sugar-free mm-hmm. gum, sweeteners. Let's see. And then your basic, you know, drugs. If people have drugs in the house, obviously they're going to be toxic to animals.
Mm-hmm.
Marijuana, THC, the oils are very toxic.
I think that covers
it. Yes, that's the majority of what
it seems like. A lot. Yeah. Okay.
And the best thing to do if you're worried about it is get them in as soon as possible. Ideally within 2 hours of eating any of these things, we can induce vomiting.
Oh, okay.
Which will save them most of the time, you know, induction of vomiting, get it all out.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be life-saving.
Okay. All right. What about ingesting? I mean, skinks and toads and all those kinds of things.
Yes. So skinks, I think, are more, so there's skinks, you know, if they ingest them, chew them up, you know, that can cause some gastroenteritis and some issues. There's a frog in South Florida that's extremely toxic if they lick it, lick the skin. Mm. But luckily, we don't have those here in Tallahassee. But in general, I just treat those just as if they ate something, you know, they're not supposed to. Okay. You know, we don't usually see like a huge toxicity from it that I'm aware of. But anytime I'm concerned with it, or anytime an owner's concerned with it, you can call. The ASPCA has a toxic pet hotline you can call. And sometimes I call it here, you mm-hmm. know, just to make sure. Mm-hmm. But that's definitely a resource that, as pet owners, you know, we all have.
Well, I have to ask you about monkeypox, and because it's a zoonotic virus, right? I mean, mm-hmm. so do you see it? Have you seen it? Tell us about
it. I have not seen it. I have not seen it, and I have not had any issues with it, and I have not gotten any. Usually I get an email or an alert mm-hmm. when we're concerned with it in the area, and I have not been alerted to it yet.
Okay. Next
which
thing,
is a good thing.
That's a good
Let's
thing.
Keep it that way.
Yes, yes. What about insect bites? I'm thinking all the things that are happening in the summertime that you really see a
yes.
lot of. Yes. And
yes,
if I forget something,
bites.
Please feel free to add it.
Snake bites.
I have snakes bites. Down and parasites. Okay.
Yes. Snake bites are huge here, and are extremely lethal to dogs, especially depending on the area. You uh-huh. know, if they're closer to the face or the head, uh-huh. we see more of a reaction. We actually carry antivenin here for rattlesnake bites, moccasin bites, you know, and time is of the essence. So it has to be sooner rather than later.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So you never want to wait 24 hours, you mm-hmm. know, or whatever, let it wait. You never want to do that with snake bites. Insect bites, the most common thing we see are just localized reactions. And usually the dog or cat will just chew at the area until it gets infected. And we, you know, treat it as an infection.
Okay.
Bee stings can cause a localized reaction. And a lot of dogs will try to snap at the bee. So we mm-hmm. see that a lot around their muzzle or their face.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something we treat as like an anaphylactic reaction. We give them steroids, Benadryl. Again, you want to get them here as soon as possible if you feel like they may have gotten stung by a bee or bit by a snake. You know, usually insect bites we don't see until later because it's not as bad of a reaction, and it's usually around the paws, and they usually present as, you know, chewing their feet.
Okay. All right.
Or chewing a foot, you know.
Okay. What about parasites? Any parasites we need to be aware of?
Parasites, yes. So we covered the ectoparasites, mm-hmm. fleas, endoparasites, you know, the worms. We run a stool sample. So parasites in dogs usually shed eggs in the stool in dogs and cats. We run stool samples once a year. If your pet's having any diarrhea, soft stool, vomiting, blood in the stool, we worry about, you know, hookworms, roundworms, coccidia. Those are the most common mm-hmm. ones we see. And then if you're doing heartworm prevention and flea prevention, most of those medications have a dewormer in them. So you're deworming them every month as well.
Okay. All right. What else was insecticides? How do I want to ask this? What impact does insecticides have on dogs and cats? And I think about, you know, just even in the yard, you know, people may be using them to get rid of insects in their grass or the plants mm-hmm. and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So most common insecticides we use now are safe for dogs and
okay.
cats. For that reason, just because so many people have dogs and cats and so many of the dogs and cats go outside, but it's, you know, you're safest to wait as long as the company recommends before you let them out. But I don't worry as much about that now within the past, you know, since I've graduated, just because most of them are so safe these days, just because so many people have dogs and cats, you know?
I can't believe it. I think we got through almost everything. I want to ask you about the effects of firecrackers, if you could make it brief.
Oh, yes. It's terrifying. Yeah. You know, it's just terrifying for them because, you know, the dogs are so sensitive. Their ears are so much more sensitive than ours. Their sound, you know, they can hear so much more than we can. So you have to think that loud noise, you know, it's scary for them. So, you know, I would try to limit it in the neighborhoods and stuff as much as possible. And if you do have an animal that is scared of them, make sure you contact your vet, not the day before 4th of July, because you'd be surprised how many prescriptions I'm writing the day of. Plan accordingly. Get them some sedatives to take the edge off. Yes.
All right. Dr. Anderson, thank you so much. It's time out. That means it's the end of this edition of 411 Teen. Many thanks to Dr. Blair Anderson, Buck Lake Animal Hospital. To my listening audience, much appreciation for your ear and your time. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen.